It's the halfway point of 2019, so it's time to look back and look ahead. From Pete Buttigieg to Curtis Hill, plus Holcomb, Pence, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 5th, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg this year launched a presidential bid that vaulted him into the upper tier of Democratic 2020 hopefuls. Buttigieg announced his exploratory committee in January after opting not to run for re-election in South Bend. He sought to maximize his potential by appearing on any news show that would have him, culminating in his breakout moment, a CNN town hall in March, where he scored points by talking about a fellow Hoosier, Vice President Mike Pence.
How could he allow himself to become the cheerleader of the porn star presidency? Is it that he stopped believing in Scripture when he started believing in Donald Trump? I don't know.
Buttigieg rode the wave of attention from that town hall to an impressive first quarter fundraising haul, followed by his official bid announcement.
They call me Mayor Pete. I'm a proud son of South Bend, Indiana, and I am running for President of the United States.
Since then, Buttigieg has been a top-tier candidate, though he's hit a recent speed bump after a white police officer shot a black man, Eric Logan, in South Bend. Where will Pete Buttigieg be at the end of 2019? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, where does Pete Buttigieg go from here?
He's got to keep going up. So but by all the things we measure progress right now, which is mainly money and polling, which, by the way, is how we also measure the election, the general election, he's moving in the right direction. Now, the situation in South Bend, the police shooting, clearly hurt him, and it gave his opponents a window to and an opportunity to attack him on a legitimate and pretty high, in a high profile kind of lightning rod issue in America right now. But look, he raised a lot of money in the first quarter. He outraised Joe Biden, I think, in the second quarter.
So far, of the numbers we've seen, I think he's outraising everybody in the second quarter.
But that has to continue because the process Democrats have set up criteria on donors, criteria on polling. If there's anything else bad that comes out of South Bend, you bet his opponents are gonna seize on it. It's a big field right now, 20 people that have access to that stage. So he's got plenty of people, other than Republicans, who are willing to go after him and try to cap him. But if he keeps moving this direction, I mean, ultimately, these primaries are fickle, right? I mean, you can fall apart in no time. You can be the number one guy and fall off in no time.
And to that point, though, we've seen particularly fickle primaries the last few cycles, and in a field this big, it feels like it's even more fickle than usual.
Well, maybe, but you know, who would have predicted that he'd be in the top tier now? So I think the sky is potentially the limit for him. I mean, there could not be a greater contrast between him and Donald Trump. I mean, he's a veteran. Donald Trump's a draft dodger. He's intelligent. Donald Trump, not so.
Or him and
he's
Joe Biden.
He's very calm. He's very calm and young as opposed to old.
Right. And he's been using respectful. That in the primary.
He's respectful. He's civil in his discourse. He's thought out his positions on issues. There could not be a sharper contrast with the current incumbent in the White House. And I think that's very appealing, particularly to young people and even to older people who know that Donald Trump's too old to be president. I believe that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are too old to be president. So, and you can see that in the amount of time Donald Trump devotes to it. You know, so we need a new, I don't want to say new torch handed because I thought that was overused in the last debate, but having somebody of his age and maturity, I mean, he is much more mature than you would expect for a person his age, I think is appealing.
He has hit this rough patch, and for a, as you said, a very legitimate reason, a very legitimate issue that he's trying to grapple with. In the short term, how does he get out of that?
Well, I think you saw a little of it this week. He attended an event with Reverend Jesse Jackson, who you know, who said, look, he's doing what he needs to do. He's being transparent. He's trying to be open and honest about the situation. Obviously, he needs to find a way to connect with African-American voters. That's going to be, I think, the difference between where he is now and if he, you know, steps up into, yeah.
Can Buttigieg be the nominee in 2020?
Yeah, he can be. Will he be? I think that's still not likely in terms of odds, because he is such a new arrival to the scene. Having said that, in terms of what he can control or what he has been able to control, it's been a textbook campaign. I frankly have never seen anybody catapult from sort of, I wouldn't even say from the mid-tier of candidates, I'd say from sort of the bottom tier in terms of visibility nationally, despite his run for the national chairmanship of the Democratic Party.
Well, which matters to the party.
Matters to the party, but I mean, that's not that widespread. To go from that.
Relative obscurity.
Relative obscurity with, what's the figure you often cite, Mayor, of the 340 something largest, give or take, 20, 30
spots. I haven't said in a few weeks, so I've forgotten.
All right, we'll go back to, we'll go to the library after this, and we'll check it out. That, it's, you don't expect somebody to be in the rarefied air with, you know, the Joe Bidens and the Kamala Harrises and some of the others and the Bernie Sanders. So he's done everything right that he can control. The question, of course, is how about these intangibles, the things that he wrestles with?
Right. That's true for any candidate.
Yeah, but he has a slighter margin of error.
He's an executive, yes.
The other thing, his candidacy, I'll just say, reflects the question that the Democratic Party has to answer between now and the general election for the next presidential contest or even the primary. And that is, he's strong among younger voters. He's strong among highly educated voters. But as was noted, how about minority voters? How about older, more traditional Democratic voters? And that shows basically a divide with
more traditional Democratic voter. He's okay with me.
A divide within the party that needs to be resolved at some point before this contest is done.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is a repeat. We want to see where you're feeling now about Pete Buttigieg. Will he be the Democratic nominee for president in 2020? A yes, B no, or C, it's still a little too early to tell. Last week's question, will Curtis Hill be the Republican nominee for attorney general in 2020? 29% of you say he will be, 71% say he won't. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of Curtis Hill, he's tried to shift to business as usual in the Attorney General's office this year, though he still faces a lawsuit and a disciplinary complaint over his alleged groping of four women. Four women, State Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon and three legislative staffers, say Curtis Hill groped them at a party last year. Hill has defiantly denied those allegations, and a special prosecutor opted not to bring charges. But the Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission filed a complaint against the AG saying Hill, quote, committed criminal acts, which reflects adversely on his honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer. And last month, the four women filed a federal lawsuit against Hill and the state.
Ultimately, we're trying to find a way to help the Indiana State House become a safer workplace for everyone who works there.
I don't think Boyles has done it. And Delaney, has Curtis Hill ridden out the worst of the storm that surrounds him?
No, he hasn't. I mean, you have conduct which is shameful in any elected official, and in the highest judicial office in the state of Indiana, that conduct should be unacceptable. So, no, I don't think he's ridden out the worst of it. I don't think he's given an explanation for it. I mean, starting out saying he was too drunk, is that an advertisement to be reelected attorney general of the state of Indiana? I went to a bar and I'm too drunk to remember what I did. I mean, his conduct is shameful. I don't know what the disciplinary commission will do with him, but I think the voters will reject him, and I do think he'll be the Republican nominee next year.
He's started to do more public events that he tells the media about ahead of time where he can take questions. He started to get out there, a lot more press releases coming out of his office. So when I talked about the idea of getting back to normal business as usual in that office, is he trying to find the path forward to where he's running that office like normal?
Well, that's just been his plan all along, is to not really acknowledge this for what it is, apologize for whatever activity took place. had he done that, had he just, I still believe that this all came out two months after it happened. Had he come out and said, look, yeah, that happened, it was inappropriate, I apologize, certainly, because the people that he accosted weren't interested in making this a public issue, right? From the beginning, but they were kind of compelled to because of the way it came out. And his approach to that all along has been just to deny that anything happened or that he should be held accountable for it. So yeah, he's through the hardest part of the criminal piece.
Sure.
There was always, and with legislative leaders and calling for his resignation, but holding short of impeaching him and having him removed from office, said, look, there's going to be a political piece that he's going to have to deal with, and he is nowhere near through all that. He's going to have to go through this the panel at the end of the year, the Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission, and then we pivot right into an election year where he already has one opponent,
on the Republican
one
side.
Challenger in the Republican convention.
This
and
happened.
Democrats who have now acknowledged that they're going to make it a priority race next year.
Right. Whatever happened in March of 2018. It came out in about July of 2018. By the time we get to November of 2020, even with the disciplinary commission complaint, even with the lawsuit, even with Democrats going after him, even with Republicans going after him at the convention, will it have been so far away that it dies down enough in voters'
minds?
Oh,
come on.
I'm asking.
I don't
it's 2 years.
No, I don't.
What do you think ads are for?
I don't think so. And I think, I rest my case, Counselor. I think you'll see his opponents bringing this up in a very explicit manner, saying, I mean, that could be a theme of a campaign. And all you got to do is basically go and grab sound bites from all of the Republicans, members of his own party, leaders in his own party, who called for his resignation and talked about his conduct and how unbecoming it was. And there's your spot, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican challenger. Yes, he can try to distance himself, and the office, I'm sure, is going to be doing good things and initiatives that are warrant coverage. However, it's hard to see how any story, news coverage of any length, isn't going to be framed or bring up in some context. Was this initiative, let's say, whatever that initiative, future initiative might be, a result of a need to counter the bad publicity or to, you know, get a clean slate or to win over new constituencies? Everything will be viewed in that through that prism. And that's tough. A few weeks ago, we had a classic example. The same week that his office was talking about securing debt forgiveness for, I forget how many
ITT,
Indiana students,
yeah.
ITT Technical Institute, who, had gone bankrupt and they were stuck holding they were out money and they had secured the $1.4 million in, I think, or more in loan forgiveness. Not a bad story, a good news story, but that was the same week as the lawsuit. And which one got all the attention? No surprise which one.
In terms of him surviving the convention, we still are a long way, and we've seen one candidate so far. We might see more. We keep hearing about the possibility of more. Is a lot of whether or not he'll survive that fight going to depend a little on the timing of the disciplinary commission's decision?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if he's cleared at worst gets I don't even think they would give him a private reprimand because that would be useless because everyone knows what's going on. So, but if that happens in, February or March, that's a lot different than if it happens in November of this year.
It also adds to the narrative. When you're talking about whether people will remember, that's a big story.
Yeah.
Right. And that's right before the convention.
Yeah. All right, well, Republican Governor Eric Holcomb is poised to officially announce his reelection bid in the coming weeks. Holcomb, elected in 2016 in a 100-day campaign after Mike Pence left to run for vice president, has enjoyed approval ratings right around 50% for much of his term, though roughly a third of Hoosiers still say they either don't know or have an opinion of the Indiana governor. Holcomb successfully achieved most of his legislative agenda in each of his three sessions. This year, after appealing to lawmakers for months for specific hate crimes legislation, the governor declared victory with what the General Assembly sent him, though many advocates criticized the final product. Meanwhile, no Democrat has officially declared their gubernatorial candidacy. Still, Representative Carly Macer, Senator Eddie Melton, and former State Health Commissioner Woody Myers are all exploring bids. Nikki Kelly, what does Holcomb have to do the rest of this year, for instance, to stay comfortable in his reelection effort?
Honestly, he just has to ride the wave. I mean, he just has to make sure he doesn't screw anything up or you know, have a scandal come out and just be steady. He doesn't even have to do anything flashy. You know, he just needs to keep
which he
it.
Hasn't so far,
you know,
anyway.
He needs to fill the potholes, fix the roads. You know, they're moving forward with a broadband program. They'll be announcing that by August. You know, he just needs to keep the engines running and on time.
Yeah, barring a huge blow-up, is Eric Holcomb pretty comfortable heading into next fall?
Oh, I think so. Again, as we've talked about on this show before, Indiana doesn't turn out incumbents who have been elected to the office once. It just historically doesn't happen. So that he has that going for him. And again, this is not a new strategy. I think from day one, he has decided to bypass some of the more heated rhetoric about social issues and wedge issues. And his strategy, it seems to me, and it's an effective one, as we see in some of the poll numbers, is, as Nikki says, focus on good government, making sure that we're delivering effective, efficient government, fixing some of the problems that have been built up over time, whether that's literal infrastructure or water infrastructure or technical infrastructure. And it's not sexy, but Hoosiers can see that there's some value in that. And also, by doing that approach, it gives him enough separation from the White House that if something, well, I know that's what ads are for, as you, we'll go back to your previous answer, but to the extent that something does blow up and either causes Trump supporters to turn away or causes them to sit out this next right. election, he has enough ability, it seems, enough wiggle room there to say, hey, I'm not tied to that sinking ship.
I want to ask exactly about that. The blow-up might not be his. It could be from a city a few hundred miles or 1,000 miles east of us. If something happens that does get a lot of the voters we saw come out for Trump in 2016 to stay at home, mm-hmm. could Eric Holcomb be in a little bit of trouble?
Sure. I mean, the wave cuts both ways. I mean, there was a big Republican wave in 2016, and every single state or person, Republican running for office except for one, won, right? So that's a true wave election. But we do have examples in Indiana's past when Democrats were winning the governor's office, but we were electing presidents by double-digit margins.
Sure.
You recall Eric Holcomb ran Mitch Daniels' re-election campaign in 2008, which was a campaign that Mitch Daniels won by 20 when Barack Obama won the state. So Hoosiers have proven that they do separate, they do distinguish between these offices. Now a giant wave when the president, if a Democrat comes in and wins by 20 points in Indiana, we got trouble.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. You know, but
especially
I don't
well,
think
you
that's
know, if it's
happen.
Mayor Pete, then
he was,
then Governor
he was elected, is, by the way.
But Governor,
that's the only way he was elected.
Well, it's a 106-day campaign, so I'll give you some credit for that. We do have Donald Trump to thank
was,
a little
it
bit.
It was Donald. No,
and
but
not
Donald
a little.
This is also this would also be
but
4 years
much,
later when he
much,
actually
yeah, yeah
later,
and this is
but
a much
his
different
profile has been so low and so laid back that it's almost like he's asleep.
It's not that he's laid. He's not laid back. He's just not like the word flashy was used. He is not flashy. He is not never going to be the red meat pounded on a. I think Mike Pence had a production part of him that Eric doesn't have a real interest in.
Well, that may be.
And presenting to voters.
Don't
but
forget,
Mike also
Mike
sends
way
waves that Eric doesn't make.
Well, hasn't made yet. But on the other hand,
if
the Republicans in the legislature get emboldened again and start again with their social issues, which they haven't managed to avoid because they've done some of them. But if they do the full wave of them, and if Donald Trump's policies continue to hurt Indiana, whether it's automotive or agriculture or export or the utilities that want to modernize, all of which hurt Indiana, and he stands up there and embraces Trump, he's going to rise or fall the way
fair.
Trump
yeah,
does.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if Trump does something that Hoosier voters fundamentally oppose and Eric's asked about it and they say,
and
he goes,
says,
yeah,
I'm
no,
all
I'm for it.
It.
We should, yeah, then that, you're right.
And
that's
he's
going to
be
I don't
in a
think
position.
He's going to do that.
He's
going to
be in a
well,
he's going to be in a position, side. Though, between now and the primary of you know, they, he could even have primary opposition if he doesn't
but
show
that,
the kind of support
that's
for
where
Trump.
The,
that you're
that's,
right.
That's where the quiet leadership.
That's been true for 3 years since we started this. Since we started the campaign.
He's only on the ballot.
That's why the behind-the-scenes leadership or quiet leadership will come into play. It's incumbent, pun intended, on him to make sure that, that the Republicans
seen,
in the legislature are held in
he
check.
He can't do that.
All right.
He can't.
Well,
moving,
I don't know what he has.
Moving on.
I think he's done it to
speaking of President Trump, year three of the Trump administration has been full of ups and downs as a re-election fight comes into focus.
Even staunch supporters of President Trump acknowledge the president's third year has been at times tumultuous, from engaging North Korea in nuclear disarmament talks to imposing new tariffs that many Americans worry are hurting the economy, from warring with the national intelligence apparatus to the release of special counsel Robert Mueller's long-awaited report into Russian interference in the 2016 election, a report which some say vindicates Trump, while others say it damns him. Meanwhile, Vice President Mike Pence has been the ever-loyal number two, even as rumors persist that Trump should remove Pence from the 2020 ticket in favor of former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who had been Trump's U.N. ambassador.
John Schwanes, has the president made his reelection bid easier or more difficult so far this year?
I mean, to take all the emotion, and this is a subject, of course, that's filled with emotion, take all that aside and just look at almost the raw data. I don't see how you could draw any other conclusion than that he's hurt his reelection bid. And by saying that, I'm talking about has he broadened his base to win over people who might not have voted for him before or who sort of were
hardcore supporters?
No, yeah. He hasn't done that. He's alienated sort of the independent faction of the American electorate and the Indiana electorate. Has he held on to his own base? He's done a better job of that, but you could argue that some of the policies that he has embarked on, certainly this past year, to frame the response in accordance with your question, in terms of tariffs that could have an impact on farmers and other types of people, that even if it hasn't eroded his base core thus far, it has the potential to do so. So I don't know how you could say anything other than he hasn't helped his cause.
To that point, though, we keep reading stories, and obviously you can't, I mean, this is anecdotal evidence, but we keep reading the stories from farmers or whomever else who say, oh, yeah, I voted for him because I thought he was going to do great things. He's really hurting me right now, but I don't regret my vote. I'm still going to vote for him. So in that sense, maybe it doesn't seem like he's hurt himself too bad, but it doesn't seem like a lot of minds are being changed either.
I think it's a little early to tell. I mean, and we've definitely seen his polling go down. I mean,
sure.
I mean, he's dropped here in Indiana by double digits. So obviously he is losing some support, but we'll have to see how this next year goes to see, and also who the Democrat turns out to be that he will face, to see if that's really going to be a problem.
Yeah, how much will it matter in that sense who the Democrats nominate?
Oh, I think it always matters who the Democrats nominate, but they're not going to nominate somebody with his temperament and personality and lack of knowledge and tweeting habits and kind of the erratic behavior that he has. It really is frightening to people watching that when he tweets out against allies.
But to some sort of more average voters, to them it's him being real
and
him
refreshing.
Being like
yeah.
themselves.
I mean,
and if we wind up going to war with Iran, that's him being real.
But in some cases it's also
that's how some people see it.
It is, and in some cases it's also like it's partly what they sent him there to do, isn't it?
Well, and you've got a Democrat field right now and almost exclusive all of them who are so smug and just believe they're going to win. And they're going to win and if they win, by the way, here's what we're doing. We're raising middle-class taxes, like Bernie Sanders said we're open to borders and decriminalizing.
No, but he's not dragging
all your people into his camp.
No, nobody's talking about raising
He's running second,
taxes.
Of course. When they ask who wanted to provide health insurance for 11 million undocumented immigrants or decriminalize illegal immigration, they all raise their hand.
We are paying health insurance for undocumented aliens right now. Because you know what? They show up at the emergency room.
I partly agree with that. But that's not
what
a presidential election is about. It's do you support or oppose you buying health insurance for 11 million undocumented at the same time when Elizabeth Warren's saying, I'm going to make 180 million private health insurance policies illegal and the government's taking it over.
Neither one of those are going to be the nominee.
So if you not...
So there.
No, but you're...
And
Your one moderate who's supposed to be the...
Who's the one moderate?
Joe Biden. He got his butt kicked the other night.
A magic 8-ball, and she knows who's not going to be the nominee.
And the ones that are crazy are dragging everybody else down the road.
All right. Finally, with Independence Day this week, I'd like to put in a plug for a piece of American history here in the Hoosier State, the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site. I got a chance recently to visit, and I cannot more highly recommend this absolutely terrific museum in the heart of Indianapolis. So, Ann Delaney, what is a historic site in Indiana that you would recommend this time?
I would recommend people visit the memorial to the USS Indianapolis, which was the worst naval disaster in the history of this country, where so many people died or were exposed or were eaten by sharks. It seems to me that would remind people of the people who go into the military and fight for us and what they risk. And I think that's a good thing to do.
What's a historic site you'd recommend?
Actually, I've never been to any presidential museum, which is crazy.
Gotta go to
Benjamin Harrison. And I've just not made it a priority. I think I will make this one a priority. And then it's not necessarily historical, but we visit state parks quite a bit. And they're a pretty undervalued asset in Indiana.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.